All right. Good evening, everyone. We're going to call this meeting to order. This is the regular board meeting with the Board of Directors, Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District. It is October 11th, 4 p.m. So we will begin with a Pledge of Allegiance. Please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Vanessa, would you please call the roll of the Board of the Directors?
Director Trevino? Director Chavez? Director Garcia?
Here.
Vice President Fellow?
Here.
President Santana?
Here. So we do have a quorum with three directors present. Moving on to the adoption of the agenda.
Motion to approve.
Second. Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Moving on to public comments.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. We have not received any written public comments. However, if anyone wishes to speak now, they may do so at the podium.
All right. Seeing none, we will move on to committee reports. We have two committee reports in our packet, Admin and Finance and Water Resources Facility Management. If anybody has anything to add to that, they may do so at this time. All right, we will move on to consent calendar. Can I get a motion and a second, please?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you very much. That is 3-0. 4-0. Welcome, Director Chavez, for the record. We are moving on to, we're breezing right through the agenda right now. We're moving on to item 7. Right now we have nomination of two, this is 7A, nomination of two upper district representatives to the Mansan Gabriel Basin Water Master. Patty?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. This is a routine item that the board generally considers once a year. It's to appoint two representatives to the Water Master Board. We need to provide Water Master with our two appointees by November so that they can get it in time for the court hearing in December.
Thank you. Okay. And with that, we will open nominations. Do we have any nominations? Yes.
Director Santana, I'd like to nominate you, Director Santana, and Director Fellow.
Thank you. I'll second that.
All right. Do we have any other nominations? We will close nominations, and now do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Is Kelly smiling? Okay.
Thank you. All right, so that passes on a 4-0. Thank you very much. Moving on. Next item is information items. We have press releases and news articles in the packet. Moving on to attorney's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few things that we've worked on since the last meeting, including the IT management support contract, the Kelly temporary contract. I worked with Tom on some building and construction and contract issues concerning the district's what the contractor's warranty. And correspond again with Tom regarding educational outreach issues. But I also want to take an opportunity, if you could put it up, Vanessa, sorry.
If you could put it up, Vanessa. I just have a couple of slides. I want to review something that's hitting the radar screens of a lot of agencies this fall, and it's concerning the PFAS chemicals that have become an issue for a lot of agencies. And so what I want to do is just review what those are, the effects that we're seeing, and the litigation that's going on now. It's nationwide. So many of you have probably already heard reports on this, but for a quick review, this is a family of compounds that were developed quite a while ago and were used in a lot of manufacturing in the United States in the 50s and 60s. it's no longer being used in manufacturing in the United States, but it is imported through when we import products that have been constructed or manufactured with PFAS overseas. It's really kind of a remarkable set of compounds. They're resistant to oil, to water, and heat. And so it has a lot of really common applications. I know being a product of the 60s and 70s, my mother cooked on a lot of Teflon, and that's where we see some of this. It's in clothing, and, you know, everybody has like a fleece vest. It shows up in that. Carpets, of course, where we want oil resistance and water resistance and stain resistance, it's in carpet. And in food packaging, especially fast food packaging. So very, very common application. We also see it rising out of firefighting foam that's been used on a lot of military bases. I actually have another client who's directly involved with that, who have lost three wells because they're down gradient of the old March Air Force Base in Riverside County. The Department of Defense has stepped up and helped alleviate the problems in one of those wells, but we're negotiating cleanup costs in the other wells, because what happens is this foam hits the ground, makes its way underground into an underground basin, contacts the groundwater, and you have an issue. Again, as you can see, it's the number of applications we had results in a very broad exposure to the public. And as great as these chemicals are for their intended uses, one of their other benefits, or now a detriment, is that they're extremely stable. They don't degrade or break down very easily. So that's why you may have heard this term, lifetime chemical. So they're really resistant to degradation, and so they are staying in our products and in our bodies for quite a while. Could you hit the next one, V? Vanessa? I'm sorry, next slide. So there's a broad range of health effects that have been associated with PFAS. Some are confirmed, some are being studied. There's been a pretty good correlation that I've read about concerning kidney cancer and testicular cancer. Evidently, they've proven to be a hormone disruptor in women, which my understanding is can increase cancer risks in women. Also, it has can play with your thyroid function or your immune functions, and can cause liver damage. Again, it's referenced as the forever chemical because they remain in the body and in the environment for a long time. They've also been found, unfortunately, in wildlife. The nature of these chemicals are that they're essentially everywhere at this point. I can't see that. It's like an eye test for me reading that bottom line, but they're ubiquitous in the United States and worldwide. Newborns carry them, and it's really, really a big problem. And groundwater, of course, is another way that these can enter into the human body through tap water. So that's, of course, what we're concerned about. And I'll report that, Tom, we did get a letter from San Gabriel Valley Water Company who had detected some PFAS in one of their wells, but not at an action level, but a low level, but still a level that's reportable. So that's the first evidence I've heard of these in the basin. So we'll be keeping an eye on that, of course. Next slide, please. So the litigation. There's been really a lot of litigation concerning this. Most litigation to date has been concerning this firefighting foam. And there's a lot of agencies who have brought actions in federal court on this. And so the federal judiciary has taken the step of putting all these cases into one court in South Carolina, who is charged with managing all these different cases. And so there are some procedural wranglings that are going on now about how we're going to resolve these cases. And one of the things that you may have read about in June was that 3M and DuPont put forward a proposed settlement to the court. The theory that they're liable is really a straight product liability theory, that they failed to warn of the dangers of these chemicals, and that the chemicals caused these ill effects in the recipients of the chemicals. But the litigation now is at an interesting point in that Sandy, 3M has put up or offered to put up between $11 and $13 billion in settlement funds to settle these cases nationwide. DuPont has put up, I believe, between $1.3 and $1.4 billion to settle these cases. So we're looking at a number of about $14 billion, which sounds like a huge number, right? However, the way the settlement is structured, it's like a class action in that if you qualify for as a member of the class, meaning you're what's described in the proposed settlement offer as a public water system, and you have contamination problems that you can prove, that you can show test results and test data to show that your wells have been contaminated, you can participate in the settlement. But as you may know, when we get those class action notices in the mail sometimes that you usually don't get a lot of money on a class action as a member of the class, but you can opt out of the class. And so there's a lot of discussion going on right now in the water community with people who have been affected. I have clients who are in this multi-party litigation, and they have to make some decisions by the end of this year whether they're going to stay in or whether they're going to opt out. And it's an interesting dilemma in a way in that there's a lot of money that's being put towards these into this proposed settlement. However, there's a couple of factors that are important that need to be considered. One of them is that if you stay in the class, you forever waive any claims against the big manufacturers, 3M and DuPont, moving forward. So if you find even greater contamination or other wells that have been contaminated down the road, you can't bring an action against those defendants. And then the other is just the amount. I know it's a ton of money, but it's been reported that Orange County estimates they alone might have somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion over the next 30 years in treatment costs trying to deal with this. And they expect they estimate there's something like 12,000 of these public water systems nationwide. So you can see that that big chunk of money goes away pretty quickly. Metropolitan is engaged on this. They have to make a determination as well. They have an extra layer of, in some ways, not confusion, but an extra layer of decision-making in that it's really unclear if water wholesalers will be included in the settlement as a quote-unquote public water system as defined by the settlement. So that's being looked at right now, and it's an interesting set of circumstances that we have concerning PFAS. Is there the next slide, Vanessa? And so, yeah, here's the details on the settlement. It's DuPont about $2 billion, 3M about $11 billion. It's a payout period over 13 years. This public water systems definition is important. And, of course, the money's going to be allocated based upon the impact you've suffered. And then, of course, we have that opt-out provision that's really kind of like a class action model. Can you go to the next slide, please? Yeah, and then so the current issues that I just briefly described, I'll review again. Does the term public water system include a wholesale water provider such as Metropolitan or, in some ways, our district? Metropolitan is exploring this now. They're writing to plaintiffs' counsel to determine if they would be a participant under the definition. I wish I could read that last that fourth bullet, but there's a release provision. Oh yeah, it's thank you very much, Director Garcia.
Future claims
yeah, it's what I described. You'd be waiving any future claims against these manufacturers. And again, is the amount sufficient? So that's where it is. And it seems like it's come upon us very quickly as an issue. PFAS. It only hit my radar screen with another agency about 2 years ago, but it seems like it's now everybody's coming to grips with it. And my understanding is that they expect to set a an MCL or a drinking water level, essentially, at the end of this year, and it's going to be very aggressive. The EPA evidently is going to be very aggressive. I heard it. One of the examples was, you know, they always use the Rose Bowl for this example about it's three drops in the Rose Bowl or something like that. But it's a very aggressive level they plan to set. And evidently there are even some concerns with the cost of doing that testing to determine to get to that level of testing is going to be expensive. So it's going to be an issue we're going to be tracking, and I think it's going to be a regular point of discussion for a lot of water agencies. Mm. So that's my, if there's any questions, I can try and answer.
Questions, comments for our attorney?
Now, can I ask a question? This is really, I wanted to ask Kelly. The city of Arcadia has had their PFAS system going. I forgot, did they do it because the PFAS levels were high in Arcadia or what? Oh, okay.
And they have to treat to non-detect, not just to the level of the new standard. It's to non-detect the discharge.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
Regarding, any other questions, comments? No. Regarding the waiving future claims, does that have, that's to this point, right? Or is there, are they waiving any future claims for any future
Yes, you'd be waiving. If something comes up, if you stay in the settlement's effective, you get your payout, and then you'd find other problems, you're not going to be allowed to go after 3M or DuPont.
What if those problems occurred after this date, for example? Still?
You're going to be waiving. Wow. Yeah. So it's, you know, you have to have your eyes wide open when you enter into the settlement. So
and then you mentioned that this is found in newborns. Well, that would mean that this crosses the placenta if it's found in newborns. So that's actually really scary because that just means it stacks through the generations. So that's something that, you know, we really don't know what the effects are going to be a couple generations down the line if this is a new thing that we're thinking about.
Yeah, so. And I guess I assume concentrations matter, but I don't know the science on it. But
yeah, that's a big deal. Yeah. And they're finding this in, you know, I've been reading some of the scientific studies as I am pregnant right now. And I'm just seeing that that certain things do stack through the generations, and this sounds like it could be one of them, and we could see some emerging problems that I'm sure that the scientific field is going to be looking at this for a while. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're addressing it, and we're on top of it, and we don't have a huge problem here in the basin, but I'm glad that we're, you know, paying attention to it. All right. Thank you very much for that presentation. Item 10, engineer's report, and we have a guest here. Hi.
Thank you. My name is Tu Nguyen. I'm an associate engineer from Texas Engineers. As you can see, I'm filling in for Mr. Stephen Johnson. He's out on vacation, so I'm here to provide you our update on our engineer's report. So this is probably more updated from the engineer's report in your agenda. So right now for the Baldwin Keywell. Oh. I apologize. The last Friday's reading, groundwater elevation was at 226.9 feet. There was no change from last week. That would be also a decrease of 0.2 feet from the prior month. And then that would be also 50 feet higher than 1 year ago. And then we're including 107,000 acre feet of untreated import water in Secret Storage accounts, which roughly represents about 13 feet of groundwater elevation at the key well. In terms of reservoir storage, as of the most recent October 10th, 2023, the combined storage was 12,248 acre feet, which is about 15% of capacity. The San Gabriel Reservoir inflow was 74 cubic feet per second, and the release was 72 cubic feet per second as of October 10th, 2023. Morris Reservoir inflow was at 65 cubic feet per second, and release was 20 cubic feet per second as of October 10th, 2023. In regards to USG3 deliveries, as of the month of September 2023, Upper District delivered 6,157 acre feet through USG3. For the San Gabriel Canyon Spreading Grounds, San Gabriel District delivered 1,171 acre feet to the San Gabriel Canyon during the month of August 2023. During the month of September 2023, San Gabriel District delivered 101 acre feet to the San Gabriel Canyon Spreading Ground. For rainfall, this is as of the end of September 2023. Puget Stones Dam, the rainfall through September for the fiscal year through September 30th, 2023 was 3.24 inches, which is 810% of the average at this time. At the San Gabriel Dam, the rainfall was 7.28 inches as of this fiscal year through the end of September 30th, 2023, which was 910% of the average at this time of year. For water quality, during September 2023, there were 21 wells sampled for under Title 22. During August 2023, 74 wells were sampled under Title 22. And also during August 2023, we have not received any public notice of any shutdowns due to contaminations for August 2023.
Great.
That is it.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any questions or comments for our engineer? Thank you. Sounds good. Item. Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Jose, yes.
And this might be for Kelly. This morning I was passing on the 605, one of the spreading bases, and it looked like the county was doing some work out there. Was that to kind of help with the percolation going on?
They're actually skimming the algae.
Okay.
They're going to be drying out the basins shortly to see if we can kind of restore some of the recharge perk. And they don't want that algae to settle at the bottom and become a barrier. So they're going to skim it before they deplete.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Moving on to General Manager's Report.
Thank you, Madam President. So just to dovetail a little bit on delivery updates, we did have a meeting on Tuesday morning before Tom left. And so just to briefly give you an update on where we're at with deliveries, as Kelly mentioned, the county and the Army Corps are doing some planned maintenance. So we're trying to coordinate to make sure that we have as minimal impact to the deliveries. But flows at USG3 will be reduced beginning October 20th to allow for a six-week maintenance period. We did find out that the Army Corps will leave water behind Santa Fe Dam up until November 1st. After that, they will drain the dam for maintenance that they need to do. Public Works is trying to determine whether or not they can also coordinate their maintenance work to take place at the same time that the Army Corps wants to do their maintenance. So we're waiting for their schedule, but hoping it all falls within that six-week period, at which point MWD is currently casting a new 250 CFS orifice plate for USG3, so we went ahead and approved that estimate yesterday. Once that orifice plate is ready and all the maintenance work has completed, then that will be put in place so that starting December 1st, we will be releasing water through that new plate, and then all those deliveries will continue through the end of December. So that's the update for now. It'll probably change in 2 weeks. Aside from that, in terms of events, I just wanted to highlight in the GM report that we have a landscape class taking place on October 14th on landscaping on a budget, and then another one on October 24th on rainwater harvesting. That one is virtual. And then we have our watershed restoration event on October 21st. And the last event that we have coming up is on November 4th, and that is with Metropolitan and their Pure Water Southern California outreach. They will be conducting another active SGV bike ride up through the bike path up to the spreading basins, and Tom will be there to provide an overview of the spreading basins in previous instances. And then the last thing is just that we are celebrating Water Professionals Week this week, according to Aqua. So we have been highlighting our staff on social media. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Do you have anything? Yes, Director Trevino.
Yes. Patty, what's the cost of that orifice plate that's going to be passed on to us?
So the estimate came in at about $37,000. However, working with Metropolitan, so the cost of that will actually be added onto our invoice through the cyclic cost offset program. So in essence, yes, they're invoicing us, but it's going to be put on that invoice through that program. So really, there's really no exchange of money.
Okay, so it's just being absorbed some way, somehow.
Right, it'll be shown as like a credit on our cyclic cost offset program agreement. Okay. And we just got that agreement this week also, so when Tom comes back, we'll be able to finalize the details of that.
And you said the plate will be installed and working when?
By December 1st is what the plan, because that's when the planned operations or the planned maintenance should be completed. Mm-hmm. So by December 1st.
Operational?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Madam mm-hmm. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Patty. Item 12, Metropolitan Report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since our last board meeting, a lot has been going on at MWD, and I just want to touch on a few topics. One deals with Senator Dianne Feinstein, the Colorado River Pure Water Project in the Bay Delta. And we'll start with Senator Feinstein. We're all certainly here, too, saddened by her death. It was rather shocking in some respects. And she loved the Metropolitan Water District, and she loved Jeff Keitlinger. I saw her with interactions with him many times, and I think if you checked her phone records in Washington, she probably made more phone calls to Met than any other entity. And as a matter of fact, she was with the, I think the day before her death, with the Dell, and they were talking about bringing her to the Diamond Valley Lake, which I'll talk about in a minute. But through the years, I got to spend a lot of time with her as the head of the party here in the San Gabriel Valley at one time as a councilman, and certainly on the MWD board, where we used to go and talk to her for 2 hours, and she'd say, come back, I have to go vote, I'll be back in an hour, stay here. And we did. And then a number of times she picked me up personally after everybody left, and she wanted to talk to me. It was always about her desert. And she was a very forceful woman. I saw that. I knew that. At some of our conversations, and it was always, Tony, you're going to protect my desert, aren't you? Yes, Senator. And that's why I have never voted for the Cadiz Project. It was something that she kept checking and wanted to talk about. And but she was a very special person. And it was one of the nice things that she invited Claire and myself to her house one day. And she gave us a tour of her upstairs, basically. There was an alcove there. And she said, I want you to look at these letters from children. And they were all saying, we think you should be president. And I learned very quickly that she wanted to be president. And I think that was her a goal, and she would have been a good one. And there were many times I got to sit with her at fundraisers that were happening in Washington, D.C. at the time that we had sessions with her and met. And the best time with her was when she sat next to me, and I said, did you see what the L.A. Times said about you today? She said, what did they say about me today? I said, your popularity is right under God. And she liked that. But I shall miss her. She was a great woman. The day of her death, Chairman Ortega called me, and I'm on the naming committee, and we talked about what should we name after Dianne Feinstein, since she was so tied to Met. And so we had a meeting that day with the naming committee, and the upshot was some people thought we should name the Colorado River Aqueduct after her. And others thought we should name Diamond Valley Lake. And at the end, it was Diamond Valley Lake. It would be called Dianne Feinstein Lake at Diamond Valley. But since then, the chair has received numerous comments from other water people and water entities in California. And they said her name is too big just to have Met take this project over. So they all want to be involved. And I don't know where it's going to end up. My 2 cents was that she really loved talking about the desert. And we're putting it off now to talk about this, and we'll see what will happen. A lot of people want the aqueduct named after her, but we'll see. But I shall miss her. She was a wonderful senator and person. The Colorado River is preparing for the 20th anniversary of the quantification agreement, and we had a presentation yesterday. And I think Assistant General Manager, would it be nice maybe next month to invite some of the people in the Met who are, gave a presentation yesterday about the history of the quantification agreement, since we have some new board members that haven't been involved in that, and what happened to our what went on, and you know, California at one time was allocated to reduce 800,000 acre feet, and now we're working on what that will be in the future. Interestingly, as I mentioned at Watermaster, most of the entities aren't taking the water that they've been allocated from the Colorado River this year. For instance, Mexico, which was allocated 9 million acre feet, only came in at 7.2 million acre feet. So a lot of savings on the Colorado River, but still some problems seeing the water levels deplete. Yesterday, the subcommittee on Bay Delta met, and we heard a very interesting panel of professors and ecologists talking about the Bay Delta, and particularly we were interested in the islands that Met owns up there and what we should be doing with them. And we'd like it to be an example for others as far as what kind of crops should we be growing up there. And the professor said we should go back to rice and look at rice as the product up there. We also wanted to be an example for sustainability and resilience and conveyance. We also talked about conveyance issues. The Pure Water Project, Tom and I met with Adele and Don Ortega last Friday for lunch to discuss Pure Water, and we talked about a number of things. The project hasn't really been approved by the board yet, and that's something that needs to be done. And we also talked about a simpler plan in the sense of should we have little treatment plants at each, like for Upper District near here? And we discussed, does Upper District really need pure water that has to be filtrated in two areas, at Carson up at Weymouth? And Adele's always talked to me about having little treatment plants along the way of what will meet the needs of each water district. But what needs to be done is Met really needs to, it's like planning for a train system, putting together what that system should look like, and then what could be added on later. Because our goal, and I think it's the goal of Adele, that this project be done quickly and not take 15 years, and that, but we need a plan, and we need what that system is going to look like and how much it's going to cost. Right now, the tremendous sessions, and we'll have more until January about different scenarios dealing with costs. But we're all behind the project. It's just that we've got to get it going. As far as pure water, that's all I have then. Good. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments at all? All right. Item 13, water quality report.
Yes. Thank you, Madam President. So the Water Quality Authority is going through an election process right now. It's a 7-member board. We have 2 members that are members of city councils. One is one member represents cities with pumping rights, and the other council member is representing cities without pumping rights. So the one without pumping rights, that seat is up. Right now, the current holder of that seat is Valerie Munoz, the councilwoman from La Puente. She'll be, her city renominated her to fill that position, and the city of Rosemead renominated Margaret Clark as well. It's good to have 2 candidates, and I'll tell you why. This is actually a rematch 4 years ago. Margaret Clark had more cities support her than Valerie Munoz, but Valerie won because the vote is weighted. So say like the city of West Covina, I think they have like 10 votes, and other cities have 2 and 2. So Margaret Clark won a lot of little cities, and Valerie Munoz won a couple of big cities. And she's the board member present. So this election looks like it may be the same. The reason why it's good to have two candidates is because the one that comes in second place will be the alternate. And if there's only one candidate, that candidate will win, then you have to have another election for an alternate. So it's better to do it all at the same time. Each city gets one vote. You don't get to vote for the alternate or the board member. You just get one. The city gets cast one vote. So they cast one vote for their favorite candidate, and then they tally up all the votes and declare a winner. So the nomination process, I think, closes later on this week, and then the cities will be allowed to vote. Most likely all these candidates or these two candidates will go to each city and ask for their support. But it looks like it might be the same. They're two good, valuable people. Margaret Clark actually was the original member on the WQA when it was formed. I worked with her, and I worked with both of them. Unlike the presidential election, it might be a repeat, and nobody likes those candidates. Everybody loves these two women. So we hope that both of them will be able to participate meaningful on the committee. So that's it.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? I have seen Valerie a little bit at the few WQA meetings that I have been to. And then Margaret Clark, I know she's on the COG. Rosemead.
Oh.
Yeah, she's on the COG in the water committee. Mm-hmm. She was anyway. So, yeah, I'm familiar with both of those people. Item 14, Water Master Report. Director Pill?
It's in the packet. Nothing more to add.
Likewise. All right. Item 15, AB 1234 compliance report is in our packet. Item 16, director's comments. We'll start with Director Trevino.
I have no comment.
No comment. Director Chavez?
Only to say that I too am saddened that Dianne Feinstein has passed away. She was a tremendous leader. I loved her ideology. She went against the party sometimes, and you know, I applauded her for that. She was really a true champion. I didn't get to go to her funeral in San Francisco, but do you remember the last U.S. senator who passed away and had their funeral in San Francisco? Because I attended that one.
Not Cranston.
Alan Cranston. Yeah, good job. Yeah.
He was a good senator, too.
He was a very good senator. And here's another trivia. So his son was dating Olive Oil.
Yeah.
The actress.
Yeah.
She played Olive Oil. Her son was dating her.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So other than that, that's my report.
Thank you. Director Garcia.
I don't have nearly as good of stories as Director Chavez, so no comment.
Director Fellow.
I still can't get over that picture you sent me.
With
that? Not you mowing your lawn.
Oh.
But I won't show that one. I'd like to adjourn today in honor of Senator Feinstein and for Sandy Morris, the wife of John Morris, who's on the Metropolitan Water District representing San Marino. She died Monday evening after a very long battle with cancer, and I knew her, and she was a wonderful person, and I know John is very distraught, but it's very sad. And I also want to congratulate our staff. They've been doing such a great job in our newest award. Were you going to talk about it? How come you didn't talk about it? From the Environmental Protection Agency, and it was the...
Oh, yeah, the big one.
Yeah, it was from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for our WaterSense Sustained Excellence Award. So this is the second year that we received the Sustained Excellence for our outreach and promotion of WaterSense projects.
And I also wanted to... I don't know if I talked about them, losing my mind. If I talked talked about this last time about the Women in Water, the event. That was outstanding, with that Patty did and staff. I thought that was one of the greatest events we've had in a long time. And it was very impressive to see all the women in the San Gabriel Valley come out, and Kathy Teagues was a wonderful speaker. And I also want to thank especially Frank and for coming out this weekend, and Kat also in Monrovia all day in the heat. And so I appreciate your help. And so we have a great staff. Thank you.
Thank you. I would just like to recognize all of the suffering that's going on right now in Israel and the Gaza Strip. Very heavy on my mind, and I'm sure many of yours. And yeah, it's just a devastating situation. And we will move on to future agenda items. Are there any?
I just, as I mentioned, I'd like to have a session on the 20th anniversary of the quantification agreement review.
Okay. Noted. Great. Thank you. Do we have any reason for closed session today?
We do not.
All right. We will adjourn today in memory of Sandy Morris and Diane Feinstein. Thank you very much.